Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about exactly that. But it's going to be perhaps mind power on multiple levels that maybe you yourself have felt challenged by, and you wonder, what could you do? What can you do? Well, my guest today, Paul Rademacher, is a man. I had the privilege of meeting him last month when I was on a business trip that took me to Virginia. His delightful book is called A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. It's travel tips for the spiritually perplexed. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donnie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a delight having you, and it's not often that I have a chance to interact one-on-one with a guest prior to being interviewed on my show, and I did have that wonderful pleasure of being back in Virginia at the Monroe Institute, and we'll be talking about that a little bit towards the bottom of the hour. But I want people to know about your very interesting background. You graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary with a Master of Divinity in 1985. You served as a Presbyterian pastor for 15 years. And currently you're the executive director of the Monroe Institute in Faber, Virginia, which is next door to Charlottesville. And the Monroe Institute is known for the exploration of human consciousness. Now, when that kind of information comes out, somebody listening to it and say, wait a minute, he had graduated from a theological seminary, he's a pastor for 15 years, what happened in there? Well, that's what your book is about.
Exactly, that's right. And I know it seems like such a strange combination to put them together, but that's what my life has been about for sure.
Well, I like one of your sentences in your book. Yet there comes a time in life when speaking the truth openly matters more than the security of a steady paycheck. And I want to repeat that to my listeners. There comes a time in life when speaking the truth openly matters more than the security of a steady paycheck. That is such a big awareness for someone to grasp. What was it that triggered that?
Well, you have to understand that that statement was not an abstraction for me, or wasn't spoken in a vacuum, because what I had at risk at that time, being a Presbyterian pastor and trying to act as if I was normal when inside my life was anything but normal, it put me in a very difficult position, because at that time I had a family to support. I had three children and a wife, and my means of gaining that support was being a pastor. But there was an internal struggle that was happening within me that really put me at odds with at least the way the public expression of my tradition. And so the book is kind of the story of that unfolding and that tension between my inner world and the outer expectations of that world. And that was what was at risk for me, was the support of my family.
And there's so many people that come to that crossroad and they get so frightened. And you, in your journey, had this occur on multiple levels, and the challenges were there. It was quite an interesting journey. Now, you are so open in this book about what you went through. And I had to chuckle when you said, every now and again, I've opened the car door and have been struck by enlightening, and it's made all the difference. And I love that description because it's so visual. Enlightenment, the awareness of more than what we've been aware of before, you know, it's just bingo. All of a sudden things happen and we make shifts. And sometimes people will say, what in the world made you do this or do that or do the other? It's not logical. But there isn't anything logical about the universal scheme of things, as far as I'm aware of. What's your positioning on that?
Well, I think my positioning comes out of experience more than anything else, because I've time and again found myself in these situations that were not of my planning or my making, at least on a conscious level. Probably the primary one being when I was in the construction business and I fell off of a roof. and fractured my left hip. And in the process of that, I entered into this other dimension. And it was something that I was totally unprepared for. I didn't even know something like that was possible. It was certainly not something that I studied for or meditated toward. But all of a sudden, I found myself in a space that was, I'd had an extraordinary amount of pain in my left hip because of the fracture when I fell off of the roof. But when I entered into this other dimension, the pain evaporated entirely. I had also had a lot of anxiety because when I found out that I had this fractured hip, I knew I'd be off work for a long time, and I just couldn't possibly do that. But when I entered into this other dimension, all of a sudden I was surrounded by complete and total and utter peace. And, you know, I've heard other people talk about that kind of thing. For instance, the Apostle Paul named that the peace which passes all understanding. But those words were always just words to me. But when I went into that dimension personally and experienced that complete peace, it was absolutely stunning. And in that same experience, I found myself at one point standing in front of a being of light, and we were conversing about my life, but we weren't using words in any way. There was just this kind of communion that was happening between us. I'd never experienced that before. And so when I came out of it, I slowly began to realize that this was the kind of mystical experience that the sages or the hermits or the shamans would talk about down through the years. And gradually I began to connect that with what I really can think Jesus was talking about when he would explain his parables of the kingdom of heaven. He was talking about that other dimension, or dimensions, plural, that is different from everyday life, that is different from our normal perceptual world, but is very much our birthright and very much accessible to ordinary people. And so that experience really changed the way I saw my life and saw the arc of the story of my life. And it changed the course of my life, because I it was that experience that made me want to go into seminary and then into church life, because I thought that going into the church life, I might be able to pursue this world somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was pretty much the opposite of that. And that's no knock on the church when I say that. But it's just not the language that many people in the church talk of very much at all. And so I found myself in a very, very lonely position of trying to connect with, reconcile with this other world, while at the same time keeping up with all the responsibilities and all the outward appearances that go with being a traditional mm-hmm. mainline Presbyterian pastor. Those are two different worlds.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. Now, your lovely wife, when you talked to her about this experience, what was her response?
Well, at that point, you know, we had both been wrestling with this question of whether or not I should go to seminary, because I had a sense of calling, and we were looking for the really, really big sign that was going to be from God so that would take away all question, because we knew that there was a lot that we would have to give up to go to seminary. At the time, we had two children, and we'd be leaving our jobs and our families and so on. So I was thinking that, you know, at first when we started discussing this, that she would be against it. But she was right away from the very start. She said, yeah, let's go. I think you'd be great at it. But we were still looking for the ultimate sign. And so on the day when I fell off of the roof, she had been kind of praying for that ultimate sign as well. And she just decided on the spur of the moment to take my two little boys at that time and bring them down to the construction site. And she got there after the ambulance had left and taken me off to the hospital. And when she was informed that I had fallen off the roof and that I had gone to the hospital, she, for at that time, knew that it was also a sign for her, just as it was for me.
Mm-hmm. You have so many different facets of your life that you talk about, and there is one point where the moving away from one's family and heritage is essential to the hero's journey. You quoted from Joseph Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
In
mm-hmm.
our society today, that is something that seems to be very difficult for a lot of people to do. 34 years ago, you didn't even think about it. It was just, gee whiz, you got to grow up, you're going to leave home, you're going to go out, you're going to make your way in the world. And it's interesting to me how things or trying to shift into a different positioning, and how much suffering people are going through because of it. They're not flowing with that development of individuality as comfortably as they should. You also bring out something about a woman who was a multiple personality.
Yes. Right.
And you have, in fact, a chapter dedicated to the genius of our multiple personalities. You discovered your multiple personalities. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is not something that I like to tell the whole world, but since you mentioned it, and it is in my book, I'll go ahead and tell you the story. I first came in contact with this idea when I was a Presbyterian pastor, very young in the ministry, and this woman came in and told me she had these multiple personalities, and I first didn't really believe her, but then I went through the experience of watching her go through this, and when she moved from one personality into another in my office, and I was absolutely awestruck and frightened out of my mind. But it was the first real indication that I had that this might be something that's real. But when I looked back over my life, I began to realize that I too, I think as many, in fact most people do, we have these different personalities that come up often in surprising ways. For me, when I think about it, one of the first times I recognized this was I was on a hitchhiking journey from Arizona. I hitchhiked westward up through California and then back to my home in Pennsylvania. I did this because I had a philosophy in life at that time that said, you know, if it was something that was scary, I probably should do it. So hitchhiking scared me, so I thought I'd take a stab at it. At one point, I got picked up by this woman in Big Sur, California. And if you've ever been to Big Sur, Highway 1 is a two-lane road that weaves this serpentine route through right at the edge of the mountains, and off to the left, if you're heading north, is a sheer drop off into the Pacific Ocean, and off to the right, the mountain just shoots skyward. We were coming around the bend, and the sun was setting, and the sun blinded her, and right at that point, there was this huge boulder in the middle of the road. The car hit the boulder, and it rolled over three times. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that we were going over the edge, and this was the end of my life. There was no question about it. So I very, to my surprise, calmly put my hands up against the ceiling as the car was rotating and rolling down the road. And what really amazed me was the serenity, the absolute serenity of that moment, as if there was this old man inside of me who had maybe died many times before and was just fascinated with the experience. Now, I had never met anything like that in myself before, but it was so utterly foreign to me and so different that I couldn't escape the fact that there are more people than just me living in this body. And, you know, and so from time to time I also noticed that, you know, as I go through mood swings or those kinds of things that we think are fairly normal, I think there are other aspects to ourselves that begin to come out in ways that are unexpected. And you know, as I said in that chapter, I think there's a certain genius behind that, because from a psychological perspective, often when we find ourselves in traumatic experiences that we simply can't handle, we assign that traumatic experience to what we call a sub-personality, which then we kind of shove off into the background. And so that personality takes that trauma so that we can continue to function in our daily life. And I think that's one of the really incredible discoveries of depth psychology, that we all have these various aspects to ourselves that we simply pay very little attention to.
I think that's very true. And it's really an adventure when you're willing to explore them, which is, again, something that you cover in your book.
Yes.
Unlearning the Habit of Doctrine. When I saw that title to your one chapter in your book, I went, wow, this is so significant. I do not know of a human being on this planet that's ever been, that ever will be, that is present right now, that hasn't been indoctrinated.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that, because that is very powerful, unlearning the habit of doctrine.
Well, there are many aspects to that. Because we are confronted with this really overwhelming task of trying to cope with this world, trying to ensure our survival. We need certain aspects to our life that give us comfort and give us a sense of safety. And doctrine is one of those things. It frames the way that we look at the world. We're taught that doctrine from the time that we're children. We inherit it from our parents. We inherit it from our teachers, from our pastors, from authority figures. And slowly that becomes the framework and the lens through which we view the world. And that becomes very, very dear to us. We will fight to the death to defend our particular view of the world. And so the good side is that it provides us this sense of safety in what we often can perceive as a very unsafe world. The downside is that it's also a set of blinders that we put on, and it keeps us from seeing beyond the limits of that doctrine. Now, of course, coming out of the Presbyterian Church and being a Presbyterian pastor, I was really familiar with how doctrine shaped the lives of my congregants, but also the way it shaped the lives of the people in other churches. And it was really very anguishing for me often when we would get together with the larger groupings of churches and watch how people would just fight to the death about their doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me like it was such a waste of time, because there's so much more to life than we will allow ourselves to perceive. One of the fundamental doctrines that we have in our culture is the whole scientific perspective that says the only thing that is real is what we can perceive with our five physical senses. And that's a very something that gives us a lot of comfort, because it limits our world. But when you do something like me, like a dumb thing, like you fall off of a roof and you fracture your hip, and you enter into a world that's beyond the five physical senses, then you begin to see how limiting doctrine
mm-hmm.
can actually become.
Very, very true. And that means you have a choice when you have an experience like that. Are you going to be able to release some things? So doctrine is a fascinating word, and it often elicits discussions, like you say, that will anger people. I mean, look at all the wars since the Second World War. There's been 250 wars plus on this planet with different people, some of the same race, some in the same, you know, countries, others countries fighting each other. And you look at all of this and you wonder, what is it going to take to understand the realities of things? But as you said, many times the doctrine of whatever can become so strong that it's life or death. It's either my way or the highway, and that's a sad thing, because it really does create what I call an imprisonment that takes away from the capacity to expand and open oneself up to opportunity. You have a statement in your book that I thought was quite a powerful one. To live honestly costs so much, because it means turning a deaf ear to the voices that would call us to more socially acceptable and profitable pursuits. In my years as a counselor, I've encountered people of all economic levels, and regardless of who they are or what status they are in society's hierarchy financially, they often deal with this dilemma. How can they be true to themselves? Do you feel that's one of the biggest challenges that you had to face, was really being honest with yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Getting back to the issue of doctrine, because we are so indoctrinated to our own particular worldview, we learn to tell all kinds of little lies about who we are and what we're about. And when you start to try to tell the truth about that, about yourself, not about somebody else, but about yourself, that's a very, very challenging thing, because it puts you in a position of maybe having to question some of those things that you've told yourself about through the years. But I also remember when I was in the pastorate, and one of the biggest issues that came up, as you just said, when I was counseling with people, was this incredible tension between who they knew themselves to be inside and what they were doing on the outside with their lives. People would say, I just want to serve, or I just want to be an artist, or I just want to be a musician or and I would say, why can't you do that? And they would say, well, I don't know how I'll make money with that, or I'm afraid to, or I don't have the education, I don't have the talent or whatever. And it was this anguishing cry almost that would come up from, I think it's at the soul level.
Mm-hmm.
It's the soul that is urging us forward to be truly who we are. And that's so, you know, you can deny that thing for years and years and years, and eventually it can either die away and you kind of, maybe the soul dies to some extent, or that anguish becomes so large that you have to do something about it. You have to make that change that you're deathly afraid of. But I think that that's the real the quintessential spiritual angst, or the spiritual journey, is dealing with that inner calling versus the outer things that we feel we have to do just to keep our existence going. But I over the years I've begun to realize that even that time of longing, that time of yearning, is a very valuable time for many people, because even though they can't necessarily make that transition, it can also be a time when they are learning the skills that they need to learn, or growing in certain ways that allows them later on then to step into that larger aspect of who they really are.
I agree. There, I love your wife, Jackie. I just think she has such a delightful sense of humor. And of course, you write about her. But you had one section here. I can't pass it up, Paul. I really can't. It's male pattern blindness. I put a great big red cloud around it when I found it in the book. I went, yes, this is a man that's going to talk about something here. And I did that. And I just loved, you had a bet.
Yes.
And she won the bet. Tell us what went on.
Oh, no, she didn't win the bet. I won the bet on a technicality.
Oh, come on.
It was one of those things, you know, the typical thing between husband and wife, where I was looking for a dictionary, and so I asked her where it was, because she knows where everything is. And so she told me that it was on the nightstand right next to our bed upstairs, and that all I had to do was go and look for it, and it would be there. And I had already looked there, and I knew it wasn't there. And so but just to appease her, I went up and looked, and sure enough, it was not there. So I went back down, and I said, I'm sorry that you've made a mistake here, Jackie, but that book, the dictionary, is not there. And she said, I'll bet you the cosmos that it's there. And I said, you're on. And just as you might imagine, she went right up, and she disappeared in the bedroom, came back out, and she's holding this red dictionary. And she came down, and she says, hand over the cosmos, buddy. And I said, no way, no way. I was looking for a blue dictionary. That's a red dictionary. So I went on a technicality.
Oh, that sounds so much like my own husband. No, this is a
thing. You know, we males, which just tells you that we find what we are looking for. And I really had in my mind that it was going to be a blue dictionary. And for me, the dictionary was not there because I was looking for something different.
Yes.
And we do this all the time in life. And that's where the issue of doctrine falls into the conversation again, because it's doctrine that shapes what we're looking for. And so we can't see beyond our expectation. But when we start to be able to look beyond our expectation, then we can find out that not only this world, but the world beyond can be open, start to open up in ways that we could never even begin to imagine. And so that once we get this larger insight or sight, then our world and our lives within it take on a completely different dimension.
For those of you that are listening, being a pastor, being a minister, and I myself am a minister as well, there is that time when you have to really be comfortable with speaking. And in your book, a Freudian slip you have in it, you had a gentleman, Ron Naylor, who, when you were expressing your feelings of concern, this one I just couldn't pass up. He was assigned to do the call to worship. He was a student pastor, he said, at the time. And the words he was supposed to read were, and may the Spirit of God light our hearts on fire. But what he came out with was, may the Spirit of God light our farts on fire. And, of course, that just really did everybody in quite nicely. But that really helped you. A sense of humor really does make a difference. Now, here
it
you've
really
been
does.
a minister, and but it wasn't really comfortable for you. There was always a war inside of you.
Right.
How did you become involved with the Monroe Institute? Because Mr. Monroe was such a brilliant man and had established this facility, and it was all about developing different levels of consciousness. His whole life had been dedicated to this research, and he made phenomenal strides. That seems so far removed from what you were involved with. How did you connect with him?
Well, I connected with him first when several years into the ministry, my wife and I were on vacation up in Toronto, Canada, and we walked into what's called the world's biggest bookstore, and it's actually still there. I was just up there recently. At the time, it literally was the world's biggest bookstore. This was before Barnes & Noble and Borders and all those other chains and whatnot. And when you walked in there, as far as the eye could see, was shelf after shelf after rack of books. I was in there just for a couple of minutes, and all of a sudden one book virtually jumped off the shelf at me. It was Robert Monroe's second book called Far Journeys. I read it cover to cover, could not put the thing down, because here for the first time was somebody who was speaking from his own experience about what had happened to me when I fell off the roof and entered into that other dimension. Here was a guy who was actually traveling into other dimensions and then telling the story of what had happened to him. Got to the back of the book and found out that there was a place called the Monroe Institute where you could go and study and experience these kinds of things. And the minute I saw that, two thoughts came flashing into my mind. First one was, wouldn't it be amazing to go to a place like that? And right after that was the second thought that said, wouldn't it be amazing to work at a place like that? And I knew as soon as those thoughts came into my mind that neither one of them was ever going to happen, because as a pastor, I didn't have the discretionary income to go to the Institute.
Mm-hmm.
But about 10 years after that, someone actually paid my way to go. And when I took that first program, that world that I experienced when I fell off of the roof opened up in Technicolor. It was the most amazing thing that I could have ever imagined in my life. And from that moment on, I was hooked. So I came back for several more programs and even did some of these programs for a select group in my church. But I knew that somehow I had to pursue this more fully. I wanted to write about it. Of course, the book is the product of some of that writing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the year 2000, that tension between where I wanted to go and what I was doing in my life became so great that I left the church. And to my amazement, 2 months after I walked out of the door of the church, I got a call from the Monroe Institute asking me if I wanted to become a residential facilitator there. And immediately those two thoughts came back into my mind. Wouldn't it be amazing to go to a place like that? And wouldn't it be amazing to work at a place like that? Almost as if my future self had traveled back in time and whispered in my ears so many years before when I had read that second book. And on top of that, I never dreamed that I would end up in this position as executive director of the Institute either. So you never know what direction life is going to take you.
That is the truth. My guest today has been Paul Rademacher. The book, A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, is a wonderful piece of material to read. If you yourself are going through various aspects of questioning, concern, look at the times we're in, a lot of people's lives are being shaken up, rattled, and thrown about like a pair of dice. Instead of just rolling around, why not pick up something like this, read it, and understand that your journey may be giving you an opportunity for something so expansive in your life that you may not even be aware that you're ready for it, and you shouldn't be afraid of the changes. A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed. And Paul, you're with the Monroe Institute, but what is your website? Do you have a website for the book itself?
Yes, we do. For the book itself, it's called spiritualhitchhiker.com. And the website for the Institute is monroeinstitute.org. That's monroeinstitute.org.
monroeinstitute.org, and then go to spiritualhitchhiker.com if you want more information on the book. I can tell you the Monroe Institute is a fascinating facility. The people, though, are gracious, and the research that's done there, you need to go and read about it because it will really impress you. And if you're curious, I've had guests on before that have attended these classes, and their intuitive processes exploded in amazing ways. Paul, thank you for being my guest today, and I wish you the best with your book and your continued career with the Monroe Institute. Again, go to spiritualhitchhiker.com or monroeinstitute.org. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Would you like to have me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight? Well, I would be delighted to do exactly that. I'm an information resource, and my intuitive skills are available to you now during the next half hour. If you would like to call in and chat with me, here is our toll-free telephone number for you to call in to. This is worldwide. I don't care where you're calling in from. Of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. I'd like to have your first name or your initial. That's all I need from you. And, of course, I'd like to know again where you're calling in from. And then just let me do my thing. I will give you the insights that I perceive about you. Then after I finish, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. So here's the telephone number again, 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you in Western Washington, it's very important for you to know that I have free family passes to an absolutely awesome event called the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. Now, if you would like to get a free pass, this is for the entire family. This is an event, and I've been participating in it during the years past, and oh, it's just great. It is absolutely magical. You walk through the gate and you enter a time frame of the Renaissance. You have people dressed in all kinds of costumes. You'll be able to rent a costume if you want to wear one yourself. The food is fabulous. The people are awesome, and there's all of these great activities going on. I have these free passes. Give me an email. Send me an email if you would like to be able to get one. Now, this is going to be held the first three weekends in August, August 1, 2, 8, 9, 15, and 16 at the Maris Farm, which is in Buckley, Washington. So tell your friends, but if you want more information, go to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair and put an E on the end of the fair when you're typing it in. And all kinds of information about the various activities. You'll see photographs. You'll see people in costume. But you can get this free pass, but send me an email. Send it to Donna. Put BBS Radio on it. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and I'll have that pass sent off to you so that you can take your family and attend this marvelous event. It's in Buckley, Washington. So for those of you in Washington, or if you're out of state and you're going to fly in, hey, this is something that's available for you, so just send me that email. Let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hello, Donna.
Hi.
Hi, it's Pat. I'm in Connecticut.
Where in Connecticut,
in
Pat?
In New Haven.
In New Haven. Okay, first thing that I'm looking at, Pat, is you've got to back up a little bit. You're really doing some excellent planning, and you're wanting to move forward at a real consistent pace. But I want to say, instead of racing, I want you to sort of go clippity-clop at a steady gait, like a horse would. Just keep that in mind. Don't try to push things too fast, because if you do, you're going to spill over on something that you shouldn't if you had given yourself that extra time. Now, I'm intrigued with the way I'm looking at a patterning over the next 6 weeks. There is going to be an opportunity for you to take on a new project of some kind, and I feel like there's a great big red stop sign saying don't do it, because what you would be able to accomplish keeping a steady gait of activity towards what you really want, if you take on this other project, it's as if it's going to entirely shift the time frame for the accomplishment you want to achieve and push it out further. And I don't think you want that at all. So don't try to take any shortcuts, and don't try to add anything additional to your plate of activity. You want to be present with where you are and be consistent and follow through. The results will be there. Don't drop the ball because someone else may impress you that, gee, they may know more than you do. Don't do that. Trust yourself and follow through and do what you need to do for you. What question do you have for me today?
Well, I was going to ask you about a possible situation. I need to move from where I'm living. I'm suffering from mold here and not a good situation. This would be living in a woman's house that has MS and doing some work, like commuting her back and forth to work, and it sounds like a wonderful opportunity. And I'm wondering if this is what you're speaking about, saying not to do it. It really seems like a dream come true right now for what I need.
All right. What you want to do is get the facts. You want to be sure that you know exactly what your responsibilities are going to be. And you need to ask yourself, is this going to deter you from what you want to achieve and accomplish? If it is going to deter you, you need to think about it carefully. Now, apparently there is some other goal or objective, not necessarily this one, that is in place. I don't see a negative with this particular situation. I don't know that it's going to be long-term, however, but that's all right. It's fine. You'll be able to do what you need to do. But I think you're having to look at a bigger picture. I really think, Pat, that part of what is happening with you is that you need, again, to be consciously present with where you are and with what you need to do for yourself and look at what the living conditions would be like. Don't be afraid to go up to this person and say, I'd like to check out the environment. I need to look at certain things because I have particular desires that I would like to have fulfilled. So
yes.
Don't just assume. Check things out.
Right. The only goal I can think of is to be able to continue painting.
All right. That may be something that when you're discussing this opportunity with this woman, is asking her, one, how much room are you going to have?
Right.
And is it going to be objectionable to her if you do your painting?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You need to ask the question, not assume.
Okay. Okay.
And if you have a chance to talk with anyone that has interacted with her before, you need to know what the up, you know, positives and the negatives are. Nothing is ever perfect.
Right.
So you want to be able to deal with the realities and be aware. If the bigger picture is you want to keep your painting, you want to keep that alive and well, then you want to make sure that you check with this person to see if that's acceptable in their environment.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Pat.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and if you, like Pat, want to call up and chat with me, I'd be delighted. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I received an email from Debbie. By the way, I want to thank those of you that have been sending me material. If I'm able to use it, then I will be sharing it on the show. She said, these are ponderisms, and they're a little tongue-in-cheek, and so I could not share some of them with you. She said, you might want to give some of these some little thought. One is, I used to eat a lot of natural foods until I learned that most people die of natural causes. I know, don't groan, it's just something, I just think it's cute. And healthy is merely the slowest possible rate at which one can die. And then this one is, health nuts are going to feel stupid someday, lying in hospitals, dying of nothing. And all of us could take a lesson from the weather. It pays no attention to criticism. Boy, do we know that in the Northwest. <That's>, oh, gee whiz. It said in the 60s, people took acid to make the world weird. Now the world is weird and people take Prozac to make it normal. Ah, yes, don't we know that. And they said, who was the first person to look at a cow and say, I think I'll squeeze these dangly things and drink whatever comes out? Don't ask me. I haven't a clue. If quizzes are quizzical, what are the tests? And do illiterate people get the full effect of alphabet soup? And this one I really liked. Why doesn't glue stick to the inside of the bottle? And then, of course, at the bottom, Debbie put in, do you ever wonder why you gave me your email address? Anyway, just a few things there that I wanted to share with you. Just a few odds and ends. Hey, we've got some wonderful guests coming up tomorrow. Oh, this is going to be so much fun. We're going to be talking about wedding reception perfection. Mark Lindemer is my guest, and he has the most incredible website. And so I have been going through a lot of the material, as I always do with each of my guests, and wow, all of the stuff that you have to go through to prepare for a wedding reception. We're not talking about the wedding, folks. We're just talking about the reception. This was mind-boggling. Anyway, we're going to be talking with Mark, and it is absolutely amazing. Then Dr. Janine Tulte is going to be my guest on Friday. We're going to be discussing Indigo Awakening. And this, to me, is a very well-done piece of material because we hear about indigo children all the time. The reality is psychic sensitivity and perceptiveness has always been. Many adults today, in fact, I was talking with someone this morning that is going through an awakening of their, you know, of their own kind. And the lady I was talking with this morning, when she was telling me some of the things she was experiencing, I said, just be prepared. This is part of what is evolving with you, and it is something that evolves, and sometimes it evolves rather quickly. My guest, Paul Rademacher, I mean, there were experiences he had. It took him years before he was able to understand them. Of course, now he's very dedicated to helping other people come to understand their own intuitive processes. So great lineup, and just know that you and your friends can always listen to the shows later on if you want by going to the archives here at BBS Radio. If you should miss the interview, they're always there for you to listen to at your convenience whenever that is for you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz. We're going to take a break. 888-815-9756. I'll take your call and perhaps give you some insights to things that you need to know about. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Remember, you can give me a buzz and we can chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And don't forget, those of you who are in Western Washington, if you want to get a free pass to the Renaissance Fair, get in touch with me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com. I've got some free passes here, and you are going to be able to get them. This is coming up in August, so this is really a great thing here in the Pacific Northwest. Many times you will hear me say with various shows how important one person can be. It is so easy to fall in love with the belief that you just are not capable of making a difference. Too often we'll think we've got to be a headliner in a major publication to have any significance, and that's not true. I wanted to share with you some stories about people, and I'm going to share one in particular with you today. It's about a Greg Mortensen. Now, he lives in Bozeman, Montana. And this is a man that has been working for peace for 16 years in Afghanistan and Pakistan. The battleground that he has chosen to occupy is that of a classroom. And this is one person, one person. Don't ever think that you cannot make a difference, but one person can. And he made a statement that I just thought was terrific. He said, the real enemy, whether you're in Pakistan, Africa, or the United States, is ignorance, because it is ignorance that breeds hatred. And I just agree with him 100%. I don't know where that hasn't been the case, and I've seen so much of it in my lifetime. It is, you wonder if the human race will ever learn. Now, he's put out a book, which I have not yet had the opportunity to review, called Three Cups of Tea. Now, he used to be a mountain climber and also an emergency room nurse, and he happened to literally fall and stumble into a remote Himalayan village. He was sick. He was lost. Now, this was in 1993. He had wanted to climb K2, which is considered one of the most difficult summits to climb in the world, and it's the second highest peak in the Himalayas. Well, the villagers just picked him up and took care of him. And he said they didn't have anything. They just had, you know, the least of anything and everything you could imagine. While he was there and while he was recuperating, he found out that there was no school for any of their children in this remote location. Now, a teacher would come into the village 3 days a week, but the children met every day outdoors on a patch of bare ground where they would scratch out their lessons with sticks in the dirt. Now, these children were determined that they were going to learn. One of the kids, while he was recuperating, walked up to him and asked that he help the community build a school. And he said it was like the light went on inside of him. This is the reason he ended up in this village. He felt very, very deeply that there was a purpose that was being established for him in that moment of being asked by this child, will you help us build a school? Now, he has established a foundation called the Central Asia Institute, and you can go to their website, which is ikat.org, and this organization, since that time frame in 1993, has built more than 78 permanent schools and 48 temporary schools in remote and often where war is raging areas of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Now, education for the children, for anyone in that part of the world, has been very, very hard. Very, very hard. In fact, frequently there are groups and organizations that don't want people to be educated, and they will destroy the schools. They will do everything they can to intimidate and terrify the people there so they will not be educated. Why are they doing this? The reason that these people, these small groups, will do this to the villagers is that they realize if the villagers become educated, if they learn how to think differently, they will also become aware of the fact they don't have to put up with this stuff from these other people, and these other individuals will no longer have the upper hand. 30,000 children, one man's dream, 30,000 children's lives have been changed dramatically because of it. Now, he has paid quite dearly, Mortensen has, to raise money for the first school in one village, which opened in 1997. He worked double shifts as a nurse, lived in his car to save money, and gave up a relationship with a woman that he dearly loved. He's endured death threats. He was kidnapped for 8 days. Why? Because he was insisting that the girls be allowed to attend his schools. He feels strongly that when the girls are educated, and this idea is not accepted well in this part of the world, and when I say that, I mean Afghanistan, Pakistan, and other countries like it. But he said the only way you're going to have sustained change is by educating the women. Global studies show that educating women significantly decreases infant mortality rates and helps to decrease population explosion, and educated mothers are more apt to deter their sons from joining terrorist groups. He said, when you can see a child first start writing his or her name, it is so rewarding. This child recognizes they now have an identity. They can write their name. It is extremely profound. Mr. Mortensen is one man. He took on a challenge that a child gave him, and that child created a difference in his life and his thinking. And in turn, he is doing the same for thousands. You can make a difference. He's educating people to become teachers so that they can carry on the work. Education is so important, but you must remember it has to begin with you. It has to begin with you being willing to invest in yourself so that when your moment, and it's not going to come with a lot of bells and whistles, look what happened to Greg Mortensen. He was sick and ill, a tiny village in the mountains of the Himalayas. Where are you going to, what are you going to do? Be in that attitude of self-preparation. This is important for you to be able to recognize and understand. When you do this for yourself, your light is going to shine in some way in this world, in this life, and it's going to make this world a better place to live in. Whatever you do, know you can make a difference. And I have some wonderful other, I have some other stories that are just absolutely awesome. All kinds of things, people in the United States, around the world, it makes a difference because we really are a global community. Don't forget that butterfly, the wings of the butterfly affect the currents around the world. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. We'll be talking receptions. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.